Opinions expressed in the show do not represent those of Hutton Broadcasting or its employees.
Good morning. This is Daniel Cobb, Doctor of Renal Medicine, and welcome to my radio show, Natural Medicine. It's March 29th, 2014. I'm here in the studio with my wife, Karen. And, I forgot to introduce myself to anybody, any new listeners. I've been a doctor of renal medicine for about 10 years, published various articles in professional journals such as the Well-Being Journal, Journal of Orthomolecular Medicine, and on the webpage for the Foundation of Alternative and Integrative Medicine. our topic today is going to be, the major topic is going to be spinal stenosis. And usually I have Karen with me to help me along with the topic, but today she is the subject.
Ta-da!
And it's because she actually has a diagnosis from years and years ago of spinal stenosis. And now I'm going to give you just a little technical background on spinal stenosis. Is the column of vertebrae stack up to form the spine, but down the middle there's an open section for the spinal cord. And as long as that, you know, there's a reasonable clearance between the spinal cord and the vertebrae, then there's no abrasiveness, no pinching, no impinging, then things work pretty well. But if something gets in there, such as if the spinal cord is just from birth, too tight on the vertebrae, then you can get irritation and inflammation, and this is called spinal stenosis. Now, there's many causes besides inherited. You can get a bulging disc, for instance. You can get trauma. You can get a little bone fragment in there. But the most common case is when you get some kind of a calcification of a nearby ligament, or if you get a little bone spur or, you know, a calcium deposit on the inside of that canal. This calcium deposit type of spinal stenosis is what Karen was finally diagnosed with. Problems, you know, you can imagine whatever problems can result from pinching one of the, you know, major nerve tissues in your body: pain, sciatica, numbness, weakness, cramping. And also this can limit functions of body parts that are controlled by these nerve tissues, such as leg and foot, bowel and bladder problems. So Karen, why don't you dig into the history? Go back to the beginning of this and tell us about your experience.
Okay, well, mine was brought on by a trauma, which I think you had mentioned that. Uh-huh. It was an injury. Actually, it was three separate injuries to the same area, which was basically my tailbone. The first one was when I was in junior high, so I wasn't even fully, you know, developed yet. So I was in gym class, and it was a tumbling situation, and I was kind of overweight, and tumbling was, I wasn't able to tuck. And so anyway, I came down really hard on my tailbone, and I didn't know it was broken, but I do know that for like 3 months I couldn't sit down without pain. And, you know, as often happens with kids, they don't tell their parents when they get hurt. And I was really kind of embarrassed because everybody else was able to do this, so I didn't even tell anybody. But now when I look back on it, clearly I had broken my tailbone, because it was like three months that was just that I still had pain when I sat down. Then later, after I had my second child, the birth was really difficult, and during birth my tailbone was broken again, and that time it was documented. And then the third time was when he was about two. I slipped on the steps. We lived in Ohio, in a farmhouse, and the steps were real icy, and I slipped and came down on my tailbone the third time. So, but I didn't, I developed, well, after the birth of the second child, when he broke the tailbone, that's kind of when, like, constant pain started happening. I think the first injury was, I was okay. But, and then as he got bigger, I was carrying him. And I know now that, you know, lifting heavy things aggravates it. Of course, back then I had a two-year-old and a newborn, and so, you know, or a newborn who was growing and getting bigger all the time. So I didn't really have the option of not carrying something heavy. So it just got pretty terrible, actually. The pain was, I mean, it was just unbelievable. And I went to my family doctor, and he was just a GP who had actually, you know, he was my mother-in-law's pediatrician. So he was just an old country GP. And, but he took me seriously, and he sent me to a rheumatologist in Youngstown, Ohio. And I thought, finally, I'm going to get some help. Because by this time, it had been, you know, several years of being pretty miserable. So my son was two at the time. So I had a two-year-old and a four-year-old. And so I went to this rheumatologist, and the first thing he said was, squeeze my hand as hard as you can. And there was nothing wrong with my hands. And because I grew up on a farm, my hands are probably stronger than a lot of women's. And so I squeezed his hand as hard as I can. And I think that I hurt him. And he just jumped back. And then he said, oh, there's nothing wrong with you. You're just a bored housewife. And I was like 22 or 23 at the time. And I was just devastated. I thought, because I really felt like, well, I came from this really strong German family, and nobody complained. We were, you know, everybody was really stoic. And so when I felt like whenever I said anything about how much pain I was in, it just, nobody paid attention to me. Nobody, I felt like people didn't believe me. They might have, but, you know, that was kind of that was probably just in me. But I really had this feeling like nobody believes me. And now here's this expert, you know, saying that I'm just a bored housewife and I'm faking it. And so I really had thought,
Didn't they have x-rays or scans?
No, he didn't even bother with trying to figure it out. It was just, and, you know, I will say he was like a new immigrant from a country that doesn't value women very much. And so I think there might have been some cultural stuff going on there. You know, now if a similar thing happened, I wouldn't have taken that as the final diagnosis. I would have gone up to Cleveland Clinic or somewhere and, you know, kept working at it. But back then, you know, I was young and I wasn't all that assertive. And so, but after that, I just thought, okay, you know, there's just evidently there really isn't anything wrong with me. So I just need to buck up. And so for quite a few years, I mean, maybe another 4 or 5 years, I just, you know, took aspirin and did what I could and just learned to live with the pain. And of course, you know, with little kids, there wasn't a whole lot of time to pay attention to myself anyway. So I just kind of plowed through it. And then we moved to Florida in the 80s when the economy was bad. And my former husband was a carpenter, a contractor, and there wasn't work in Ohio. So we moved to Florida. And it seemed like when we got to Florida, I got better just sort of spontaneously, and I think it was because of the warm weather. And so I was okay. I mean, it was much more manageable there, and aspirin did kind of take care of it. I mean, enough that I could put it out of my mind. And then when I had, let's see, I had another child in between there, and it didn't seem to make much difference with the pain. But then when I had my fourth child and my last, after his birth, it came with a vengeance like it hadn't for years. And it was so bad. And so I told my gynecologist about it. You know, I said, I'm in so much pain. And he didn't do anything. And he just sort of ignored it, too. And finally, after maybe the third or fourth time I told him, he said, you know, I'm going to send you to a rheumatologist. So here I am back at another rheumatologist in another state. And this guy, he said, well, I think maybe you have lupus. Because, I mean, the pain was really all over. I mean, it wasn't just my spine. It was down my leg. It was, they'd say, is it a sharp pain or a dull pain? And, you know, I couldn't, it was so extreme. I hated to say it was a dull pain because to me, dull sounds like not very painful, but it wasn't. It's a pain that's like, I mean, I really thought maybe I have bone cancer or something. It felt like it was in the marrow of my bones. And so he put me on this drug Feldene, which caused me to have a bleeding ulcer, which caused all kinds of other problems. And I just was getting worse and worse and worse. And finally, my OBGYN, when he saw all the drugs I was on, he said, okay, that's enough. He said, we're going to do an MRI and see what's going on. And then when the results came back, he acted really surprised. He said, wow, you have a significant spinal stenosis. You must be in a lot of pain. Like, it was the first time he believed me ever. So this had been like, what, 20 years? Maybe 15 years that I had been living with this. And finally, someone found a reason and acknowledged I really am in pain.
We're going to go to a break now, and we're going to hear more on the story of spinal stenosis. This is Daniel Cobb, Doctor of Oriental Medicine. Welcome back to my radio show, Natural Medicine. We're here in the studio with my wife. We're talking about her experience with spinal stenosis. But before we get back to the show, I want to mention my contact phone number at my clinic, which is 505-424-9527. And also the call-in phone number, which is 505-424-4550. And we also have a gift certificate from Joe's Dining, a very nice restaurant in Santa Fe, that goes to the first caller. If anyone calls in, the first one for that particular show gets a $15 gift certificate. Good at Joe's Dining. Karen, you want to continue on with the...
Yeah, so my math wasn't very good right there at the end, but it probably was more like 10 years from the time that I really started suffering until it was finally diagnosed. And in the meantime, like I said, very few people believed me, and... You know, there were all kinds of tests. I mean, that second rheumatologist I saw, he even did, I mean, this was quite a few years ago, and he even did the test where they look for genetic markers for rheumatoid arthritis, and that was his final diagnosis, that I was in the early stages of rheumatoid arthritis.
But also having spinal stenosis.
Well, so two diagnoses. It was after. My OBGYN kind of blew the whistle on the rheumatologist when he saw all the drugs I was on. He goes, okay, we're done with this. We're going to find out what's really going on. And then I had the MRI, and then it showed that up. And like I said, he acted real surprised. Like, oh, you really are in pain. Who would have thought? You know? So, I mean, just the frustration of being not being believed or having people think that you're faking or... And I think for me, that's especially hard because I'm a real, I like to think of myself as strong and independent and, you know, of all the people. I mean, that's just such a horrible feeling to just be treated like you're just faking it or you're trying to get attention or something like that because it's not who I am. And
now, at that point, once you got the real diagnosis, then... You know, what was the plan or the prognosis from that point?
Well, you know, that's interesting because there really wasn't much of a plan. And I think it was just to take aspirin. Like, I'm trying to remember now because I know that doctor didn't put me on any anti-inflammatories or anything like that. So you know, it's kind of interesting, but for some reason, just having the diagnosis, at least I felt like, okay, I know what I'm dealing with. And so I read everything I could about it. And I read a lot about dealing with chronic pain. Oh, he did tell me that at that point, he said, well, there would be some things we could do. He said, but he said, not now. And because he said that, and back then, and I think probably still today, although not quite as much so, spinal surgery was pretty dangerous. And they told me that, and maybe I did go back to the rheumatologist. I sort of forget now, it was so long ago. But, you know, one of them did tell me that at some point in your future, you'll have to have the spinal surgery. And what they'll do is go in and they actually use the word route out the, you know, like a router, you know, so like route out the extra calcium in the spinal column. But then they said there's a chance that a little piece of that, if it gets loose in there, it could, you could end up being paralyzed. And so they said that we won't do that until you can't walk anymore. And they said that, you know, within the next 20 years or so, that's going to happen. That will eventually happen. And
just for frame of reference, how long ago was that statement made?
Let's see. I was like 32.
Yeah.
And I'm 58, so you do the math.
26. Okay.
So 26 years.
Been more than 20 years.
That's why I married him, so I don't ever have to do math ever again in my life. I just give him some numbers, and he tells me the answer. And time, I'm not very good with time anyway, so I get kind of confused about time span. But anyway, so I thought, well, I'm not going to have surgery, so I guess I just have to live with this, which is kind of what I was doing anyway. So in a way, things didn't change all that much, except I finally had a diagnosis, and I got off all the Feldene and those really horrible anti-inflammatory things I was taking that had all the nasty side effects. So,
And I remember about the time we got married, you said, you told me.
Yeah, a few years after that, we got married.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You were telling me, oh, my gosh, watch out. You know, I'll probably be in a wheelchair.
Yeah, I know. My future didn't look too bright. And, I mean, there were years before I was diagnosed. I remember one year in particular at Christmas time, I just laid on the couch and I felt like I can't walk. I can't go get groceries. I can't buy my kids presents. I mean, it was just...
For how long? What's the... You know,
it just was constant. I mean,
right.
Just
there was at least a constant level of pain.
There was always
some. But then
there was
periods when the pain was elevated.
It was just unbearable, and there was no position I could get in. It's not like a pain that you could move a certain way and get a little relief. It's just anybody who has it knows, you know. And it followed the sciatic nerve, but it also, I mean, it. Somehow it must have gone further up my back because it went out into my hands and my arms. It was kind of like fibromyalgia. I just felt like I had been run over by a truck a lot of the time. I mean, just unbelievable pain. And so anyway, then I met a couple years later, I met you. Oh, well, so then I decided, okay, so this is just the way my life's going to be. And I just am going to have to find a way to power through it. And I'm not going to spend the rest of my life laying on the couch. And so I just forced myself to get up. And I started college, which, you know, I was 35 at that time. And I had never gone to college. And so it wasn't a big priority for our family. And so I started at community college. And I got interested in going to school and all of that. And, you know, I think I studied some, you know, the psychology of pain a little bit. And so I kind of understood about, like, neural pathways. And, you know, in my reading, I discovered that it was a good explanation for me that when you have chronic pain, it's like those neural pathways get developed sort of like water running down a mountain. And so
it's all set to happen.
It's almost automatic. And I think that kind of explains why sometimes after people have back surgery, they still have pain because those neural pathways are just set in place. So I think starting college, you know, it created a some other neural pathways, and it kind of actually made the pain a little bit better. So, you know, maybe that's something that would help people who are listening, who are mm-hmm. dealing with chronic pain. It also explains why when we moved to Arizona, my pain got a lot better. It was, which there was a new thing happening.
Yeah.
I was
new experiences, something, different exposure.
Yeah, yeah, and so it kind of made more pathways going on in my brain.
But also and, warm and dry.
Yeah, and I think warm and dry helped a lot. And marrying you and starting to eat a little healthier. I mean, I was always a little bit aware of things. You know, I always cook good meals for my kids and tried to use things out of the garden and things like that. But I think, you know, increasing awareness of diet helped a lot. And
maybe you should mention at some point that you divorced your previous husband.
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't really want to dwell on that part too much.
We don't want the police officers coming to the door.
No, it wasn't like that. But no, that's another show, which we won't do. But yeah, so I will say things got much better when I married Dr. Cobb.
Okay, all right. And and one of the things, well, I even before I became a DOM, I had a previous experience with a calcium deposit. Even, you know, I think this was, this was after I became a DOM. I don't want to get into that experience because that might be, you know, for a different show altogether. But during the first couple of years that we were married, or, you know, even the first 8 or 10 years, periodically you would, you know, you'd have two weeks, 3 weeks when, you know, even though the pain was generally better in Arizona mm-hmm. and after you came to New Mexico, if it got triggered, mm-hmm. you'd be in pretty serious pain
for a couple weeks at a time. One of the reasons why it got a little bit better and then only flared up occasionally is because my kids grew up and I wasn't having to carry, you know, a 2-year-old mm-hmm. on my hip anymore. Mm-hmm. So, but I still, you know, did yard work and things like that. And so I would often lift something a little too heavy or something like that and get aggravated.
Okay. So what, you know, when we're going to go to a break here very shortly, but when we come back, we're going to discuss an idea that I got about how to treat your particular version of spinal stenosis.
Yeah, and it worked.
Tied to calcium deposits. And the call-in number, I'll give the call-in number one more time.
504-424-4550.
And the first caller gets a $15 gift certificate to Joe's Dining. I'll mention it quickly. This is Daniel Cobb, Dr. of Oriental Medicine. Welcome back to my radio show, Natural Medicine. after we've been married about, 8 or 9 or 10 years, I'd actually gone through an experience on myself with dealing with the calcium deposit. And then after I got through that, I thought, this spinal stenosis that Karen's been telling me about is at the root of it, a calcium deposit. So maybe what I did for my own self could work for her. And let me give you a little background. It involves two things, and the first thing is DMSO, which is a waste product of the paper and pulp industry, but when purified has several medical uses. I believe it's common to use it as some kind of a horse liniment, and there's some uses that people have come up with for humans also. But my introduction to DMSO was reading a review of a book called The Devil's Diary, which is a CIA book about creating mayhem given the circumstances that a person was dropped into a foreign country with no resources whatsoever, besides the clothes on their back. And this book described, you know, plant poisons and how to make bombs out of, you know, common materials. But one of the things that was in the book was the CIA's use, described the CIA's use of DMSO as an assassination technique.
Okay, I'm not convinced at this point.
this book described...
No, I mean to have it used on me.
Well, this book described how the CIA may have also invented the felt tip pen, that they would take a boom slang venom, which has sort of a latency period of a couple days, and they would mix it up with DMSO. Now, one of the characteristics of DMSO is that it passes through skin immediately. But another very unusual characteristic of DMSO is that it will take almost anything with it, even things that will not on their own soak through the skin. So they would mix DMSO and the boom slang venom and put it into the felt and then put that into a pen. And they would innocuously go up to their target and sort of drag the pen, the edge of the tip of the pen along the person's arm, releasing some DMSO with the snake venom. And they would excuse themselves and be very courteous and leave. And 3 days later, the person would, you know, suffer the symptoms of the venom.
That's like 007 kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, it was. So the idea here isn't that DMSO is dangerous by itself, but it's dangerous in that it can bring things along with it into your bloodstream right through the skin. So when you're dealing with DMSO, cleanliness is really next to godliness. And, you know, I figured out that when you're dealing with DMSO, you know, you don't want to clean things with soap because soap isn't something you want in your bloodstream. So I clean things only with water, and I use my fingers to mix it because I can clean my fingers. But only with water. I use only glass containers because I don't want things leaching out, metals, plastics, only glass, the least leachable material. Then the other thing, and now going back to a calcium deposit, if you're trying to melt a calcium deposit, acid melts metal, and calcium is a metal. So what I wanted to do is figure out an acid that I could mix with DMSO, that I could get into the body in a specific location, that would either be beneficial or innocuous. What I settled on was called ascorbic acid, which is the chemical name for vitamin C.
You know, it just occurred to me, this week I descaled my Keurig coffee maker.
Uh-huh.
And basically it's the same thing. You run vinegar or acid
right
through your coffee maker to get all that
right
stuff that's built up on the inside
acid
out.
Melts
so,
metal.
So it's a very similar thing.
yeah, except we couldn't run the water through. We have to just sort of put it in there and let it do its thing.
But it explains why it works.
Yeah. What I did was I mixed, and you have to get pure vitamin C. You don't want pH neutralized vitamin C because then it wouldn't be an acid anymore, or it'd be very, very weak. You want the pure, so that when you look on the label of that vitamin C, you say the ingredients, ascorbic acid, other ingredients, none. That's the kind of vitamin C you want. So I would mix it up in this glass container with where everything was washed very meticulously with water. And then So it sort of formed a paste. And then I would spread it on, Karen would sort of point to the area where the pain comes from, and I would spread it on the area, and we'd wait for 15, 20 minutes, and then we'd wipe it off. And we'd do it again in another week or two, And the reason is because your bones, having a high calcium content, also have metal characteristics. Although, because they have a protein matrix and they're constantly remodeled, meaning they're rebuilt, they're much more resistant to, you know, degradation by, you know, this DMSO vitamin C acid combination than a calcium deposit, which isn't living material. But we don't want to overwhelm the bones. We don't want to degrade the calcium deposit. The bones will be affected a little bit, but they'll come back fairly quickly. That's just why we waited a week or two in between each treatment. But it was fairly simple. It took maybe 20, 25 minutes the whole time, you know, each treatment, getting ready, applying it, wiping it off, and then being done with that treatment. And we did this maybe over a 4 or 5 month period. And then give me a reaction on the results here.
Well, it got much, much better. And, you know, and I have to say, I was a little skeptical, when he first said this, because and part of it is I really didn't want to get my hopes up that there was something that could cure me, because it had happened a couple times before and I had sort of just decided, yeah, nothing's going to work. But it but it actually did, and to my surprise. And, you know, there were several other things, too, that were going on at the time. So I don't think that's the whole answer. Uh-huh. I did stop eating foods that cause inflammation, and I think that's a big key. Because really, there is room for my spinal cord. The problem is when I get inflammation and it would push against the side. So there were two things going on. The opening was getting larger because it had less calcium mm-hmm. buildup from the DMSO vitamin C treatment. And then I was learning how to reduce inflammation, which is something, you know, if you don't have spinal stenosis, but you do have chronic pain from inflammation, I mean, it's well worth your effort to change your diet and to go to a non-inflammatory diet.
You want to throw out some clues about avoiding inflammation?
Well, you're probably more of an expert on that, but I just have learned a couple things. No flour, no sugar. I'm much, much better off.
Yeah.
those are the two main things. There might be some other things too, but just meat, fruit, and vegetables. If I eat those things, I'm fine. Mm-hmm. So, but this really has worked, and it's probably, you know, like I can still aggravate it if I lift something too heavy, but nothing near like it used to be.
Right. So the real in my mind, the test as to whether or not the calcium deposit has diminished is we do have events, you know, you lift something, you do too much work.
Yeah, everybody kind of has that,
yeah,
I think.
And so you have events where it comes back.
In the meantime, I aged, surprisingly.
Oh, really?
So
I don't think so. 2 points for me.
points for you.
But
so really, you would think I should be getting... Well, much worse. You know.
Well, and the tendency on calcium deposits is they do accumulate more calcium.
Mm-hmm.
So that we would have, the test of the calcium deposit theory is that, yeah, you have these experiences where your back hurts, but it's nowhere near what it used
Mm-mm.
to be.
Not at all. By now, you know, based on what the second rheumatologist said, by now I should have been in a wheelchair instead of hiking up in the mountains to Nambe Lake.
Right. Okay. Now, we're going to go to a break now. We'll come back for a few more minutes, in a few minutes for the concluding segment on spinal stenosis. This is Daniel Kopp. Dr. Voynal Medicine, and welcome back to my radio show, Natural Medicine. And we're back with Karen talking about getting treated by the DMSO vitamin C combination and the results. And you want to continue with that a little bit?
Yeah, so the main thing is I'm not in a wheelchair. I'm not going to be having spinal surgery.
And you're, and you're looking forward to a summer where we take a lot of hikes up in the mountains.
Yeah, and I also am a tour guide out at Las Golondrinas, and that's a lot of walking uphill.
And what's your...
I go out to the farthest. I take my group as far as I can take them.
And your reputation out at Las Golondrinas that distinguishes you from other people.
Oh, well, I don't know about that.
Well, okay.
No, it's just that some of us out there are a little more, some of the younger tour guides go farther than some of the old timers. They stay up close, but we go way out. There's several of us who go out pretty far. But anyway, so I probably am able to do more things than many people my age, and so who have not had any diagnosis. So I feel really fit. I feel healthy. I feel better than I have in years. So, and in fact, every year I feel better than I did the year before. So I'm sort of living my life in reverse, I guess. But, I was thinking about how we can make this show more applicable to more people, because, you know, it's probably a small group of people who have spinal stenosis. But, you know, if you have any chronic pain or... And if you have any kind of calcium deposit, this would be something to consider. And, you know, I know Dan gave some advice on how to do it, but I really would say, I'm trying to imagine if I didn't have access to the everything that you talked about, really I would suggest it would be better to just, you know, go come see you. It's definitely worth an office visit.
Right. I mean, I would think if you've been struggling with something for, you know, a long, long time, and, you know, typically calcium deposits are something that
They're chronic.
You're told you just have to live
chronic
with.
Chronic, and there's not much. One time I had one on my wrist years ago that they did use ultra. I went to a chiropractor who used ultrasound, and that dissolved it. But you can't do that on a spine because your spinal cord's right there.
Yeah, so it's this a little more dangerous.
Yeah, so this is a safe way to do that. But, you know, I just really encourage people to do that. And then just in dealing with pain before you get it solved, the one thing that I did learn, and I learned this when I had, I have a master's degree in counseling and I worked in community mental health. And quite a few of our patients, they had dual diagnosis with drug addiction and then also mental illness. And so when they had chronic pain, they couldn't take they couldn't take any of the normal pain medicines because it would cause them to be addicted. And so the psychiatrist there would recommend that people who have chronic pain, if you take, it was based on a German study that if you take 2 aspirin, the strongest black coffee you can get, and sit in the hottest bath water you can stand, it works as well as Percocet or, you know, some of those other kind of dangerous painkillers. And, you know, I know Dan isn't a big fan of aspirin, and I don't think it probably is a good thing to take. So I think you could replicate that effect with white willow bark or something like that. Mm. But just, and then the other thing is when the pain starts, if you can nip it in the bud, and not let that pathway get going.
Right.
So if you have a flare-up of pain, if you let it go for a day, it can get entrenched, and then it seems like, at least that was my experience. I don't know if there's...
Well, if inflammation, let's say in your case, if there's inflammation in the vertebrae or the spinal cord, and if it expands to it starts to push on, you know, other tissues, then... The fact that it starts to push on other tissues then causes more inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
So it cycles back on itself.
Yeah, so you get stuck in this cycle. So, I mean, those are some practical things that maybe even if you're not dealing with spinal stenosis, they might be something you can take away from the radio show.
Which goes back to the idea of, you know, low inflammation foods. And sometimes low inflammation foods might be, you know, person specific, you know, another... Mm-hmm. possible cause of inflammation might be nightshades.
Mm-hmm. But like food sensitivities.
People, yeah, food sensitivities. You know, more applicable to some people, but not others.
Sometimes I think the task of our lives is to learn to understand our bodies before we die. I mean, it's taken me like 58 years to start to figure out like, oh, this is good for me, this is bad for me. You know, for some reason, we humans don't quite have the knowledge that most animals have. So.
Yeah. Well, when we had goats, I remember the goats, you know, our people's vision of goats is they just eat everything, including tin cans. They would sniff everything and they would think about it and then they'd decide if they're going to eat it. And the sniffing, apparently there's a lot of intelligence that goes
with. Well, they say if you put minerals, different bowls of minerals out, they'll go to
exactly the one that they need.
To the one that they need. And then a day or two later, you might put the same bowls of minerals out and they'll just bypass that one and go to a different one.
Yeah.
So it's like they have that knowledge. I think we've kind of deadened that. And when you're dealing with chronic pain, you know, you really deaden everything. I remember going for a massage and they always said the same thing. You're just not in your body. And I said, if I was in my body, I'd be on the couch. I can't be in my body. I have to just plow through my life here. I can't give in to this or I'd just be useless.
Well, I want to go to a sort of a summary stage now. So the original diagnosis that you got mm-hmm. was the result, you know, there was several fits and starts, but after 8 or 10 years, they finally got the diagnosis right.
Yeah.
And it was made with conventional diagnostic imaging techniques. the idea that the problem is now substantially improved, mm-hmm. You know, with dietary changes and mm-hmm. and the DMSO vitamin C combination. We didn't volunteer to spend the $5,000 to go back and do imaging.
I'm not going to do another MRI.
No. So it's a little bit less certain, but we're, you know.
Yeah, it'd be kind of nice to have that just so that I could say, oh, this is how it used to be and this is how it is now. But
you know.
I think if you're 58 and you're not, you know, and you're not in pain and you're able to hike up to Nambe Lake, then you're probably okay.
Yeah, and that's
there can't be too much wrong.
Right. So we're not prepared to show, MRIs and
so
CAT scans. We're prepared to describe the dramatic difference in mm-hmm. your pain levels and your ability to do things. As evidence that this is really what happened.
Yeah, I'd say I'm the foremost authority, as you often say.
Yeah, I am the foremost authority on yourself.
I'm the foremost authority on how I feel.
And that this improvement also happened in the same time frame that we applied these treatments that theoretically would have had these effects.
Absolutely.
Okay. So spinal stenosis due to calcium and calcium deposit or bone spurs can be a life-changing condition because it can not only cause a lot of pain, but sometimes affects the function of body parts further down the body, typically and very frequently legs and feet to the point where mobility is a problem. So this is, you know, this can, as it develops, as it progresses, mm-hmm. get to be, even if you can withstand the pain, can be, have dramatic effects on how you conduct your life.
Yeah, a lot of people who have it, at some point they can't drive anymore because they can't control their foot on the gas pedal and the mm-hmm. brake.
And so this is, you know, a reason why I think, you know, if you know you have spinal stenosis caused by a calcium deposit, you know, you want to think about this approach because although, you know, what's the risk here? The risk is if you do the things properly, if they're done correctly, for instance, in our case, that 5 months of treatment cost us, a couple hours out of our life for all the treatments combined, plus about $30 to $40 in materials. Okay? So if it didn't work, that was our risk. 5 hours and $40.
DIY treatment.
Yeah. 5 hours and $40. That was our risk. And what we got from it was, a dramatic change in your life.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I'm thinking, okay, that's a reasonable risk for somebody, people out there, you know, you got spinal stenosis, you know it's because of a calcium deposit, or you know you have a calcium deposit that in some other aspect is impinging on your function, you know, this is a possible treatment. And as long as it's done, you know, following the rule, following the rules of absolute cleanliness, you know, do it correctly.
I still would suggest that.
Oh yeah.
That people come and see you, and also if it's on your spine, it's really kind of hard to do that yourself. I mean,
behind your back, you need somebody else to be applying
it's
it.
Good to.
And you want to do it exactly right. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I would say, you know, this is an idea, and actually one of my articles that I frequently mention in my introduction, the Journal of Orthomolecular Medicine, is actually the article that they published on how to melt calcium deposits.
This is an article that you wrote.
That I wrote,
that was
right.
published in that journal.
In the Journal of Orthomolecular Medicine.
So this is really something that you came up with on your own.
Right, right. I came up with it. And I think we're out of time here. And so I thank all the listeners for listening in, and thank Karen for joining me and sharing your story and keeping it very conversational.